This episode is brought to you by soulconnect.com.au. G'day, soil lovers. You're listening to Secrets of the Soil podcast. I wanted to create a podcast that each week we had the opportunity to dig deep on some of the secrets of the soil. A podcast that gave our soils a voice. So here we are, sharing secrets of the soil with me, your host, Regen Ray. We would like to acknowledge the traditional landowners of which this podcast is being recorded on and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Hello, soil lovers. Regen Ray here, and welcome to another episode of Secrets of the Soil. Today, we're going to be talking all about the landscape and hydration with my guest, Jono, from the Maloon Institute. How are you doing, Jono? Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Doing really well. Thanks.
Excellent. Now, the Maloon Institute has also the Maloon Coaching. So which part do you work in? And tell us a little bit more about what you've been doing.
Yes. Yeah, so, Ray, I've been with Maloon for about 9 months. I've been sort of following them pretty actively before. That keeping an eye on what they were doing, and got the opportunity to get involved with the consulting team to take on this role. So I'm the general manager, so work with the team on building the business and getting there out there and sharing what we do with the network. We have a sort of educational arm to the business, which we're sort of really just ramping up at the moment, running workshops and boot camps. So we're pretty excited about that in terms of where that's going and building the capacity of landholders to better read and understand their landscapes and sort of where landscape rehydration fits in with that. And a lot of them on their sort of journey for a bit of change in what they're doing as well.
And how important is that change? Like, what are some of the things that people really lean on the organization for? Is it, you know, leaving a lighter footprint? Is it better quality food? Better farming, carbon, climate, you know, what is it that they're doing it for?
Yeah, I think a combination of those things, Ray. One of the things that we do when we're working with landholders is really get a good understanding of their values and their goals and what they're trying to achieve. And for some people, it starts off, particularly on the landscape rehydration side, with a problem that they've identified in the landscape, whether it be an erosion issue or waterlogging or a number of reasons that might be related to the hydrology and what's happening there. Other people are a bit further along, so they've got some of that nutted out and then they're going, well, we want to build natural capital and we're really keen to sort of take our farm where it is to the next level. And so we find that it really varies in terms of what they're looking for. The interesting thing is, I guess, because we've got the Maloon Rehydration Initiative at Bungendore and the sort of catchment scale project there, a lot of people identify with things that they've seen or heard, or they've come to the farm for a tour. So they get all caught up in what's happening in the creek and what's actually happening in the waterways, when quite often it's around sort of pulling them away from that and getting them to look more broadly and say, well, what else is happening here? Because in a lot of cases, it could be something like a change in grazing management and increasing ground cover and what that does for holding back water and sort of keeping some of that in their landscape as well. So, and that's why I guess we've moved towards this education process, because it's not like a prescriptive approach. I guess industrial farming is very much around, well, here's the prescription for this, here's the prescription for that. And this is very much about full landscape function. So, yeah, so it sort of tends to be one of those things that every place we go, there's something different to consider.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I say that, like, the farm, you know, footprint is as unique as our fingerprints. You know, it's like it does take in a lot of different requirements and, you know, having that more bespoke approach to it where it's, you know, one-on-one or, you know, one-to-many and we're looking at the farm. And I think it's really important that you said as well that everyone's so interested in how, like, the creek is performing, but we really need to zoom out and see the many parts that make up the whole, and the water quality or the you know, life in that creek is a result of everything that's upstream and the side of the stream, and even the farmer, you know, the mindset and their paradigm and the way that they view their landscape. What are some of examples of things that really do play a big part of, you know, seeing the many parts to the whole? Do you think it's mindset, or is it like features and benefits? Is it money? What makes people get motivated to zoom zoom out and see the many parts?
I think the starting part of that journey for a lot of people is just that bigger picture of not looking at a problem in isolation, but sort of really just, as you said before, zooming out and looking at the landscape more broadly. And as you say, that involves the various pieces of the puzzle. It's not just the land itself, it's the people involved with it, it's the interaction of animals and plants and everything else as well. So it's really building that appreciation for, while there might be a particular issue you're looking at, let's look at it from a holistic point of view. And then we can sort of start to sort of take some action from there. And some people that we deal with too, it might be that there's other issues that are better to focus on first in terms of bang for the buck than necessarily landscape rehydration work. It might be because of their topography, or might be that their perception is that there's this major issue, but it's actually not quite such an issue for them. And so it's really sort of taking people along that journey of understanding what's going on in their landscape. And that can also include not only their landholding, but what's happening in other parts of the catchment that's influencing that. Amazing. As well.
I think that's
No,
just a great point in regards to, you might have your action plan, but what you do first for your bang for buck, you know, return on effort, return on investment really matters. Yeah. So I think that's sometimes people go for the big goal, and like that then wears you out and you run out of energy, you run out of money, and maybe that wasn't the right thing to do at the right time. So prioritizing those action plans, I think, is really important. You were going to lead on to something else?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, that's why when it comes to thinking beyond their farm gate too, that's another part of why we felt that our education program, and particularly our boot camps where it's sort of 3 days and we get into more detail, is that it can involve a community. So we're actually building the capacity of a community as opposed to just individuals within that community. And that can sometimes include stakeholders outside of our traditional farmers as well. So it might be, I was just talking to somebody this morning actually, where regional council's taken a really strong interest in what landholders within the catchment can be doing for the impact on water quality for the community at large. So it's interesting how, we can engage multiple landholders in what can be done to improve the landscape. Mm. But education is a sort of key part of that, and bringing them along on a journey. It's really about that sort of social change aspect in a lot of instances.
Yeah, beyond the farm,
which is challenging.
I love that. Yeah, well, and that is the challenge, because I think a lot of people focus on what they have direct control of, which is great, but that beyond the farm gate, which I think is an awesome way of referring to it, is like, what is happening in the local council, what is happening at legislation level, you know, all these carbon projects that are popping up everywhere, what's happening at global levels with like IPCC reports and things like that. How can we align to match all those? And does the Millennium Institute help with kind of understanding all those things that are happening at more of like a global level, and what needs to then happen in your own backyard to ripple that effect?
Yeah, certainly, Ray. While my role is within Maloon Consulting, we have the Maloon Institute more broadly, and we're really fortunate to have a significant amount of time and energy that's provided pro bono from our Law Committee and Science Committee. And so between them, our CEO particularly, and the rest of the team, keeping an eye on what's happening both domestically and in the ag sector, but sort of more broadly around natural capital and the environment, and also keeping an eye on what's happening in the global scene. We're not operating in isolation in Australia when it comes to landscape rehydration. There's other countries that have got the issues too. So there's some fantastic work being done elsewhere. So sort of learning what they're doing, how they're doing it, and everything's really good too.
Awesome. And so with the coaching side of things, I feel like that's a little bit more hands-on approach. I've been on the website, you've got like site assessments, and you've got like, detailed designs and landscape stuff and site reviews. So is that more like boots on the ground, where someone comes out and physically looks at the property and puts a bit of a, mud map together, pun intended?
No, that's right, Ray. We have a process where, it's in engagement with individual farmers. So that can sometimes start with those initial site assessments. Other times it can be starting off in the education space, and then they need some ongoing support. So as we're designing the scaffolded structure of our education program, it became pretty clear that, particularly in the adult education space, there's a tendency to go away to a particular education event and then go away from it. You go back to the farm and you've got 10 things going on, things that need to be fixed, animals that are sick, all this stuff going on in your head. And then you might circle back to it in a couple of months and have lost that confidence to apply what you've learned. Yeah. So part of our program has been to build in mentoring, ongoing mentoring, so that the landholders that we're engaging with, we can be there for support beyond what they're learning. And that in some cases will be online. So it might be that people are quite confident just to have that online support when they need it over a 6 month period. In other cases, it's definitely about being there on the ground and helping them on the ground. So it's a bit of a mix.
Yeah. And I think that's great because it works in with what people need. But I think you're so right. I've seen it happen, not just in the ag world, but business, marketing, coaching, everything. Everyone leaves an event. They're all fired up, got all this new knowledge. And they're like, now I know what to do. Then they get onto the farm. They're like, oh, but how do I do it this way? And this is now, you know, a different circumstance. And having that mentoring, and I like to, you know, say like having someone hold your hand through the process is really comforting, even if it is just a shoulder to lean on every now and then, or like, I've got this dilemma. Like my neighbor said this and the guy at the pub said that. What do I do? I'm a bit confused and overwhelmed. And often than not, that overwhelm kicks in and it goes, ah, too hard basket. I'll do it another time, or another time never happens. So I think the mentoring link in this space is really something that, you know, with my previous work got me really fired up of saying we need to help people through that transition. Even with like all the sites that you're working with, they come into case studies, you know, so other people get to see what's happening and visits and tours and all that, which is really exciting.
Definitely. Yeah. That tour aspect and demonstration aspect and showing people what can be done is very powerful. And one of the things that we've invested some time in over the years is around storytelling of what's being done. So using animations and videos to help share what we're doing. The before and after photos is the one that I find really powerful, is for people to be able to see a degraded landscape. And then within an amazingly short period of time, with the work that we're doing, just to provide those tools to nature to just speed up the process. Because a lot of what we do in terms of our interventions is taking natural processes and trying to put the bits and pieces back in place so that nature can just do it quicker than it otherwise would.
Yeah.
It's a really, really cool process.
Yeah. And for the soil lovers listening, if you head over to maloonconsulting.com.au, you'll see right in front of your face a big before and after. It's a really nice kind of picture. You've got a waterway that's got eroded edges and the water looks dirty and murky. And then on the other side, you've got this like nice crisp water that's reflecting the blue sky and green reeds everywhere that are filtering the water. What kind of effects does a transformation like this have, not only on the farmer, but the surrounding ecosystem?
Oh yeah, it's fantastic, Ray. Like the positives are, like, we could talk about it all afternoon, but depending on where it is and what it is, I guess there's using the Maloon Rehydration Initiative as an example, we survey aquatic species, bird life, the health of the waterway and everything on an annual basis. And the improvements are quite astounding in terms of the massive increase in wild bird life, a reduction in pest fish species and an increase in native fish species from the work that we're doing. So all of that, I think that with the growing awareness these days of ecosystem services and natural capital, and it's giving farmers the confidence that not only do they have the opportunity by slowing the flow of water down on their farms and retaining more water in the landscape for production benefits, but there are actually these other co-benefits that are really valuable as well, and that I guess community and society is taking a much greater interest in as well. So
you've mentioned natural capital a couple of times, and I think some people know what it is, but can you go a little bit deeper into what natural capital is and how farmers might be leaving some capital on the table by not knowing what it is?
Yeah, so I guess my personal interpretation of natural capital, Ray, is just around building that natural resource around the environment that we're operating within. So, and building the biodiversity around that as well, like from 200 plus years of agriculture in the way that it's been conducted in the majority of the country, we have depleted a lot of that natural resource and the biodiversity of it. So getting our landscape functioning back to something that's going to build that capital back up, whether it be trees or wildlife species or just having greater diversity in your perennial pasture species and all those sorts of things, getting back to a point where we've just built nature back up. And that doesn't have to come at the cost of good production outcomes for a farm otherwise in doing that. I think there's some level of trepidation with some people to sort of take that step. In my view, and from what I've seen, the two can work in hand in hand. If we can have good levels of agricultural production and building capital at the same time. So, and for the soil lovers out there and for yourself, you've got an appreciation for what great benefits come from increasing the health of our soils and increasing the health of our landscape. So,
I agree. I think so much, you know, people's awareness is shifting to understand that it's not the, you know, kilos of hectare of inputs that we're putting on the property that really matters. It's bringing the soil biology back to what it once used to be, you know, and reversing some of the industrial agricultural stuff that's happened by accident, you know, like, you know, people were just doing the best that they knew at the time, and acknowledging that and going, maybe there is a different way. You know, might not be better, might not be easier, but there's definitely this kind of thing in most people's heart that says, oh, I feel like farming needs to be a little bit more natural, a little bit more organic, to some degree, closer to nature, and maybe getting out of the way and letting it do what it needs to. But with the coaching and the mentoring and the advice and the guidance of people who have been there, done that, and using multiple case studies to, you know, bridge the gap. I love the idea of these kind of living labs that people are starting to talk about now, where the research comes from the farm first and then joining the dots later and going, oh, there's some, you know, data that makes a pattern here, but it's an after realization rather than an intention to go and find the data that supports that. So I think farmers that are becoming more empowered to treat their farms like a bit of a research lab or an experimental paddock and just try different things, it's really fun to see the community share that. Obviously, you're bringing multiple people together. There's a sense of community, I guess. People have a vested interest in, you know, common values and goals. How important is community and other people that are like-minded when you're going through a process like this?
Yeah, good question, Ray. It's I suppose it depends on what you're trying to achieve and at what levels. So I suppose in some instances you could say that if you were doing work with an individual landholder and they had desires to make some change, that, well, does it really matter what the rest of the community thinks or what they're doing? And but there's so much that you'd miss out on if that's the way you were taking it. So I suppose if you think of a catchment, and that there's various different definitions around that, but if you sort of think of a farmer's position within a catchment, they've got neighbours, they've got other people downstream that might be utilising water and other things, or it might be something bigger than that. It might be a migratory bird population that that farmer's got a key part in. All sorts of different things in terms of what that broader community interest could be, whether it's people or whether it's the environment or what have you. So I think to operate in isolation to the community is a real risk. And when I say risk to not getting the best benefit out of it that you possibly could. Don't get me wrong, bringing a community along is a big challenge, and it's something that we spend a lot of time thinking about. The Maloon Rehydration Initiative at Bungendore, that's been 20 plus years in the making. It's not something that happened overnight. Through our learnings of that, we are hoping that we can get that change happening quickly and at a quicker rate and get the community on board at a quicker rate. Yeah. But it takes time. So, but I guess from our perspective as Maloon, it's not scaring us away from still trying to get larger scale adoption. Because at the end of the day, there's a lot of repair and restoration required across the country. So we're doing it one farmer at a time. That's pretty slow. So if we can get the community on board, then you just have the opportunity to scale up, increase the levels of awareness and bring other people along on the journey as well. And that can include school kids. So citizen science is a really important part of this, is helping the community that may not see themselves as being directly impacted, and bringing them along as part of it as well is really powerful.
I think there's a lot of people who feel that like what they do doesn't matter or can't play a big part.
Yeah.
And that really is, you know, at the buying side of things, if, you know, decisions are made to buy certain products or support particular types of farming or practices, it does play a big part, especially when we're now at like 8 billion people around the planet. You know, everyone doing one small little action every day can compound very, very quickly. And then it becomes the norm. And it's like, this is just the only way that we know. And that would be a really nice day to witness, and may not even happen, I guess, in my lifetime, but it'll be nice to know that we're moving towards that. You mentioned about younger kids coming onto farms or learning about this. How important do you think it is to shape the mindsets of the younger generation and get them excited about farming and, you know, lowering the average age of farmers these days as well? Because that's crept up too over the last few decades.
Yeah, well, I think, I guess my view on society in terms of agriculture and the environment is I think we've become quite disconnected from what happens on country where we're producing food. So I think there's a very good reason for doing it, just purely and simply to raise the awareness and get back to that connection between where's our food coming from, how are people operating in the environment, because there's all this noise in mainstream media around what's going on and the farm and farmers participation in that, and sometimes the messaging so wrong in terms of what's really happening on the ground. So And young people are very influenced with that. There's so many forms of information that they're pulling in these days, between just the mainstream news and having that on the TV in the background in the morning, but also what they're seeing on social media and everything else. So if we don't get young people out there and experiencing the truth of what good farmers are trying to do, then they could get caught up in this warped view of what actually isn't going on. And then and then that creates a powerful movement. And all of a sudden, what we're trying to do as good in agriculture all of a sudden becomes under threat, because society's questioning all this stuff and you're doing this wrong and you're doing that wrong, when actually farmers are generally out there trying to do the right thing. And as you would have had a lot of people in these discussions say with you, Ray, like generally farmers are trying to do the right thing. If they don't look after their environment, they haven't got a business. So, but so often that negative slant gets thrown in there. And I think, we are quite vulnerable to what those young people grow up and think about. So part of our program, with actually using Maloon as a living laboratory and having other places that we can take people, is school groups. So so it's great to be able to get those school groups coming out and seeing what they do, what we're doing.
I couldn't agree more with that younger mindset. You know, it really shapes the way that people solve problems. You know, I think someone on a school bus that's going on a tour might say, I'm going to start I want to get interested in this. So I want to start a business that solves that. And I think often than not, and you can see this as a trend, like there are TikTokers and YouTubers that are like 5, 6, 7 years old, you know, doing some really innovative business ideas. So that whole, you know, mindset that people need to be, you know, graduates and gone through the whole education system to set up enterprises is, you know, becoming thinner and thinner. And I think, you know, farming is one of those enterprises that if people get excited about at the right age, we can have a really big impact on bringing multiple people. And I think farm automation and farm, I don't want to see AIs raising our food, but I think using technology to help make decisions and, you know, keeping the farm on the North Star and in the direction that we needed to go, having drones fly around of paddocks to do observations, so that way you're not using diesel to go from gate to gate, like huge ways of saving time and redirecting that effort into like marketing or growth or business development. Because you're right, most farmers don't wake up and say, how do I go broke today? You know, they're all thriving to do better and to live, create the land better than the way they found it. But,
100%.
That's definitely a misconception in the world, is that, you know, farmers are doing the wrong thing. And that's why I always make an effort to say that everyone did the best thing with the best knowledge they had at the time. And now we're evolving, we're learning about soil and the importance of the biology and how to nurture it and not kill it through, you know, inputs. And, you know, people are starting to innovate. Now, we're going to take a quick break, but you spoke a little bit about the school buses, and I know that you've got like it's a lot of demonstration and learning hubs. So we're going to talk a little bit about that just after the break. So soil lovers, stick with us. Hey there, soil lovers. Did you know that there is now a digital agency that is committed and dedicated to soil caring businesses? Maybe it's you, or maybe you know someone who's really looking after our soils and they need to reach more customers. Well, finally, there is a marketing agency dedicated to soil caring businesses. They are soilconnect.com.au. In fact, it's one of my own businesses. I saw a need in the marketplace for a company that was good at marketing and digital, but also loved soil. Well, connecting those two interests together, I got Soil Connect. So head on over to the website and see what services we can help you with in order to amplify your soil caring activities. All right, enough from me, back to the show. Welcome back, soil lovers. You're hanging out with Regen Ray and Jono from the Maloon Consulting. And we've been just talking about, you know, demonstration sites and learning hubs. Jono, you have some learning hubs. Tell us a little bit more about what these learning hubs enable people to do and see, and what's it like going out onto one of these demonstration sites?
Yeah, Ray, we run a few different things. We have what we call a community tour of Maloon. So that gives people sort of a half day opportunity to have a look at some of the interventions that we've done at the Maloon Rehydration Initiative in terms of just seeing the types of practices that can be applied within that context. And then we also run sort of tours for other groups as well, whether it be schools or individuals, and to really bring them through and give them an appreciation for that sort of basic level understanding too around what's going on in this landscape and how might have it looked in the earlier days compared to how it does now. And what have we tried to do to intervene to get it functioning better? So that's really our aim with our tours and groups coming through, is to just give them an appreciation of what can be done and what can be achieved. And yeah, just to actually see it and ask the questions and engage with our team around what's going on.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I often hear farmers and people who have gone on these tours going, the soil feels different. You know, it's like all these little minute, you know, things, or the soil smells different, you know, all these things that you just don't have the ability to do on your own farm. And it's really interesting when walking with people who, I call it like literacy of the landscape, when people have that real high level of understanding how to read landscape. And I think a lot of First Nation people do have this intuitively where they, oh, that song of a bird means this, or that smell is this particular plant and it's doing this function and this purpose, or it has this medicinal principles. You know, those things become really important when we walk the landscape and just feeling the different sponginess, I guess, of the soil and understanding the profile and the texture. Some farmers get game enough to even taste their soil and, you know, and using our five senses that we get to make those informed decisions. I think the more people engage in these learning hubs and tours and things, the more you're training your brain to look for the right thing and feel the right thing. Do you feel that that kinesthetic approach of like touching, feeling, smelling plays a big part in really understanding the world of nature?
Yeah, look, I think it does play a big part, and it gets back to that sort of broader discussion around the disconnection. Like it's a way of actually bringing people back and getting them experiencing it firsthand. Like, and the great thing with digital technology these days is we can tap into videos and all that really easily. But there's nothing like actually getting within an environment and experiencing it and in person, and having the opportunity, as I say, to sort of engage and question things and like, well, why have you done that there? And what's going on here? And and for people to really live through that. So yeah, I think it's very important.
Jono, what were you doing before getting into what you're currently doing? Like, what led you down this path? Why do you feel, because you've got a background of business with a bit of agriculture commerce in it as well. And you're also studying at Southern Cross University. So how did all these kind of roads cross together?
Yeah, well, Ray, I'm a farm boy from South Australia originally. So as they say, you can take the boy away from the farm, but you can't take the farm out of the boy. So there's always been that passion for agriculture in everything that I've done. I was sort of fortunate when I left school to be able to have 4 years working on farm in the Riverina for a fantastic family and sort of experiencing that at a young age, in addition to, I guess, that lived experience as a child growing up on a farm. But yeah, look, I ended up doing an agricultural commerce degree, and then accounting was sort of the thing that sort of really turned on for me during that process, even although I could never see myself being an accountant when I was growing up. But it sort of, that's where that sort of led me. And so I spent close to 27 years working in the accounting profession. The majority of that was with farmers. So there was still that strong connection with agriculture. And fortunately, I was with a firm that that had a very strong focus in agriculture as well. So but probably what really lit the torch for me was I did a holistic management course 20 or so years ago with Bruce Ward. And that just opened up a new approach to looking at agriculture in a more ecological way, I suppose, and in that more holistic way. Even though I'd done some training on that at university, I guess just the context of where that fitted for agriculture really seemed to resonate with me. And so I guess, yeah, after doing accounting for 27 years, decided, well, that my innings was probably done there, even though it was a fantastic journey. And I thought, well, why not pursue my passion of, I guess, what has now become Regen Ag, but just, as I say, a more ecological approach to how we conduct agriculture. So that's really what sort of took me down this path. And then when I made that decision, I thought, well, there's a fair bit that I want to invest in terms of just knowledge. So did a few short courses, started the postgrad diploma through Southern Cross Uni, and then I happened to cross paths with the Maloon CEO at an event, and yeah, the stars sort of aligned there, and got an opportunity to join the team. So, and it's just been a fantastic, I've only been in the role for 9 or so months, but yeah, just fantastic organization to join and to be, yeah, working at that level where we're probably, with the work that we're doing, it's sort of a little bit on the edge. So there's a lot of curiosity around it. Yeah. But yeah, just working in that space and working with farmers that want to sort of drive for that change has been, yeah, I guess something that I've really enjoyed.
I love that. You know, along the edges is where the magic happens, where, you know, I think that's really, really cool to be working at an organization that is being curious, you know, taking different viewpoints and going, well, we've always thought it's this, but what about if we layer it with that? And, you know, creating new ideas and having that open mind, and, you know, and having the business acumens as well of, like, you know, the accounting background, I think that's really strong, because a lot of times when I meet farmers and so forth, there is, you know, they're the fifth generation farmer. They're just doing what, you know, the parents did and the grandparents, and there isn't that level of business acumens or decision making or understanding even to build their own time. You know, that's got to be added to the bottom line. You know, maybe you're profitable because you're working as a volunteer, you know, and you know, and things like that. So really understanding those kind of, you know, ways of layering it all together, and the many holes make up the part, which, you know, is part of the holistic management side of training. And I didn't know that you did that, you know, many years ago, because I've recently done that as well. And I agree, there's something that happens in that course where it just changes the way that you see everything. I don't know, I did it you know, with Brian Wilbur, and yeah, it was just transformational. I didn't think going there would do that to me. You know, and a lot of people mistaken are thinking it's all about how many, you know, cattle you can have per acre, and it's more about decision making and mindset. And it was very, very eye opening for me. With your years of knowledge and experience and so forth, what would be, like, something that you wish we could just download into everyone's brain and they kind of just got it, or had that kind of secret sauce or that, like, magic wand? What would that be that you'd love to just transfer into everyone's brain?
Wow, that's a big question.
Yeah.
I think now, having done a bit of work in this space, Ray, gets back to what we started talking about at the start, is really taking that step back, looking at things through a much wider lens at everything that's going on, and using that as a process to really drill down to, one, what's going on here, but how do I want to see this develop, and looking at it from that point of view. Because I think in any business, whether it's a farm or a retail shop or a manufacturer, we all get very busy in what we're doing, and then it just becomes part of the everyday routine, and we don't often give ourselves that opportunity to step back and look at things. And I think that's one thing I'd say, is just take that time to step back and go, what's going on here, and where do I want to see this going in the future? I think particularly in farms, landscape function, all of that, I think is very relevant, because it changes around us all the time. The seasons change, and even the many parts within a season change. So if we're not stepping back and seeing the impact that we as the managers within that environment, and how we're impacting that and how the whole ecosystem is working, then I think there's a lot that you could be missing.
such a great tip to, you know, not even a tip, just a great view on the ability to zoom out and see the many parts that make the whole. Because I feel like we live in a world now where it's like, I say like embrace the generalist mindset. You know, I think the world used to have a lot of generalists, and then we went down this path of like everyone being really specialist in what they do. And you see with a lot of things, like there might be a noise with your car and you take it to a mechanic and say, oh, it's this. And then you got to go to the next one. And each person you go to gets more and more specific to that problem. And they know a lot about their one little field, but you kind of have to start with someone who's a bit more of a generalist. Medical world's the same. You have a GP, a general practitioner. They know a lot about everything. And then you go, okay, well, that's a bone issue. Now you go see the bone specialist. So having that ability to do that in our own life, where we zoom out and see the many parts, you know, we might have something happening in our own backyard, but maybe it's got to do with the neighbors or government legislation or, you know, the climate, you know, some things we can control and other things we can't. So I think that's a really good point to you know, really have the soul lovers reflect on and think about what they can do today to just kind of zoom out and take a step back and think about that. Jono, are you ready to become the voice of the soil?
Oh, this is a big one, Ray. Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, let's do this. So Jono, you have become the soil. You're embodying its energy and you are its mouthpiece. What would you say to all us humans on the planet today as the soil?
Yeah, Ray, I've thought about this one a little bit. I think if I was a degraded soil, because I think we often think when we're thinking soil and in the soil loving community, I think we all think of soil as this fantastic functioning ecosystem. True. But I think where the big opportunity is, if I'm a degraded soil out in the outback somewhere, I'd be saying to people, I'd be saying, well, like you, I need water, I need food. So, and I need that to survive and thrive. And what you see up there is a bit of a lens into what's going on down here. So make sure you hold a bit of that water back for me. It's really important. And get those plants growing and then we can all have a party.
Love that. Love that. I think that's a really great point that you make, because you're right. A lot of people do speak as the soils in like it's now and repaired and you know, flourishing with goodies, but there is that kind of realness that a lot of the soil in the world is depleted and it's thirsty and it's hungry and it needs plants to be its communicator and to get the resources and hold back the water. I think that's a really good point on that. And just to stick with the water side of things, you know, you've mentioned slow the flow a lot and so forth. Where do you think, why did we let the water rush off to the catchments? And like, why do you think people cleared land? You know, can you speak to a little bit of that, of like maybe what were people thinking to remove the things that slow the flow, and now why are we starting to put them all back?
Yeah, I think, Ray, like looking at that with some of the landscapes that we work within, when we sort of talk to some of those farmers and they think back to what's happened previously to their ownership, because a lot of that hasn't happened within the sort of current generation or two, it might have happened quite a bit longer ago. I suppose on the clearing side, it's that sort of view, well, we sort of need to clear this land to be able to do more farming. So get rid of the trees and we can bring the tractors in and we can crop more country. And then I guess on the water side and draining side, it's like, well, that paddock gets too wet. And so let's drain that water off and then we'll be able to do what we want to do there. So I think it's been through that sort of lens of, okay, well, let's just take this resource and do with it what we want to do, rather than sort of saying, well, how can we be part of that environment and achieve some farming outcomes with that? So, I know that there's a lot of people that would probably criticize that and go, well, gee, that we've got to feed the world and we've got to do all these things and we need the land to do it. But yeah, that's, I think, so how some of that's come about.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that maybe there could have been some balance in between as well. So
yeah, I think that's a very good point, and you said it very, very well. I saw similar signals as the, you know, people tell stories, and you know, they went to the bank and the bank said, I need more money. They're like, well, you need more farmable land, and this quote unquote define farmable land. And at one point it was cleared land with fences around it, you know, and I think that definition of farmable land was too important over, you know, land fertility or land stability and so forth. And now we've we've gone too far. And I think we needed that reference point. You know, I want to stress to the soul lovers all the time as we speak about these different conversations. I never believe that we can bounce back from something unless we hit the low. And I think we needed to hit the low in order for us now to plan what the future looks like. So we need that reference point. And without that, we would just be still on the downward slope. So it's good that we've gone there and we can now have the awareness that things need to change. But if we never went there, we wouldn't know how to think up and forward, you know. So it's not to dismiss anything that's happened. It's like, be thankful and grateful for that, because now we can plan forward. So it's all good things, you know, that we can speak in open spaces and be comfortable to share what really happened, so that way we can plan a new way forward.
And that's so true, Ray, because it's not, we're not trying to restore something back to where it was, because the world's constantly evolving.
Of course.
So if we can't sort of expect that it's always going to be going back to this, because there's positives out of some of those changes too, in terms of what's happening in the environment. So it's really thinking about the environment as a constantly evolving thing. So, and what part are we taking in all of that?
Absolutely. Well, Jono, it's been a blast hanging out with you and talking about all the things that you've been doing and things that you're working on. It's really, really great. How can soul lovers hang out more with you and the Maloon Consulting?
Yeah. So Ray, we've got a website. So there's the maloon.org and also Maloon Consulting. We've got a mailing list. So if people want to be sort of dished up with some information on a fairly regular basis about what's going on, we also have an events page on our website that keeps people up to date with what's going on. And I'm also on LinkedIn, as are quite a few of our teams. So
awesome. I think that's LinkedIn's a great platform now. I'm connecting with a lot of change makers and people that are doing wonderful thing. Definitely keen to see more people hang out on LinkedIn and share information. You offer a lot of different services. Does your consulting, is it like what's in, what's out, or, you know, does everyone, how does that kind of work from a business side of thing? Is it, you know, case by case, or, you know, tick and flick?
Pretty much. Pretty much case by case and pretty bespoke, Ray, because as I said earlier, like every landscape that we go into is different. People's values and goals are different. So, so we sort of have to take a very personalized approach everywhere we go. So
cool. Mm. Excellent. That was the answer I was hoping for, because, you know, I think there's too many people in a one size fits all. And I think the world is beyond that, where we live in this world of personalization and customization. I think, you know, services like this really need to be what's in, what's out, what works for me, and having that, you know, ability to sit down and consult with someone and then build a plan and an action plan is really exciting. And I think something the industry definitely needed a long time ago. So glad to see.
Even with our bootcamp programs, that's very much about going to that community, getting within their sort of context of where they are and stuff as well. So yeah, I guess we've got great ambitions of what we want to try and do around the country as well. So so it can be anywhere in Australia. Just get in touch with us.
Share a little bit about what the boot camps look like, because that's quite intriguing. I know boot camps from a business marketing world, but I'm curious to hear what it looks like in your world.
Yeah, so for us, it's about taking people along a program of understanding landscape processes, developing their prioritization around what they want to do within their landscape, and just giving them some tools to be able to get on ground and do some of that initial intervention type work themselves, if that's sort of what's required. So just arming them with a few skills to be able to do that themselves. I guess working in waterways currently in Australia, we've got a regulatory framework that sits around that. So that's often pretty daunting and risky for people to go into. So they want to know, well, what can we do outside of that regulated system? So our boot camp's really designed the outcome, I suppose, so that people can walk away from it and be armed to actually go and get some on-ground action within their own environment.
Amazing. And great to hear there's no push-ups and burpees.
None of that.
Good. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Jono, for hanging out and sharing everything with the Soul Lovers today.
Thank you, Ray. Really nice to catch up with you.
Same. Well, there you go, Soul Lovers. Another episode for you to sink your teeth in. Make sure that you're sharing the episodes around to your friends, family, and anyone you can convince to talk about soil with. Until next time, make sure you get outside, get your hands dirty, and keep digging deeper into the wonderful world of soil. I'm Regen Ray. I'll catch you on the next one.
Wow. Well, soil lovers, that's enough secrets for one episode. I really hope that you enjoyed all the secrets shared during this conversation. But hey, let's not keep it a secret. Please share this podcast around and make sure that you like it and leave us a review, because that really helps spread the secrets of the soil. Until next time, remember, get outside, get your hands dirty, and keep digging deeper into your soils. This episode is brought to you by soilconnect.com.au, a digital agency dedicated to soil caring businesses. If you run a business that is caring for soil and you make our soils better today than what they were yesterday, but you want to reach more customers, then check out what Soil Connect is all about at soilconnect.com.au.